Nearly 2 years ago, Joplin, Missouri was hit by a massive and deadly tornado. After that, the National Weather Service evaluated their warning system, and this week, a new, more specific warning system has gone into effect. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. That Joplin EF5 tornado in May of 2011 was the deadliest single tornado since record-keeping began in 1950. Today on the program, we'll hear from two Iowa National Weather Service meteorologists about the new impact-based warning system. Then we'll also listen back to my conversation with storm chaser Jeff Petrosky and his firsthand account of the Joplin tornado. That's all coming up this hour after the news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In May of 2011, almost 2 years ago, Joplin, Missouri was hit by the deadliest single tornado since record-keeping began in 1950. Later in the hour, we'll listen back to my conversation from last year with storm chaser Jeff Petrosky and his firsthand account of that devastating Joplin tornado. Well, after that disaster in Joplin, which claimed some 160 lives, the National Weather Service evaluated their warning system and the public response to it. That led the National Weather Service to develop a more specific, what they're calling, impact-based warning system. And this new system started last year in just a few states to our south, Kansas, for instance. Now it's being expanded to include Colorado, Wyoming, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, and us here in Iowa as of this week. It's still called an experiment forecast product since it's not used nationwide and since it's still being evaluated. So in this first half hour, my guests are two Iowa National Weather Service meteorologists who will tell us about the new impact-based warning system. Joining us from the Quad Cities, John Hazy is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service there. Hi, John.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Brad Small with us from the National Weather Service office in Des Moines, a meteorologist there. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
John, let me start off with you. What is the change we will notice the next time severe weather rolls around into our state, into perhaps our counties?
Well, this impact-based warning will be an enhanced wording for the strong to violent tornadoes, where we will be enhancing the wording such as considerable damage or catastrophic damage. However, this is going to be a rather rare situation because only about two strong to violent tornadoes actually occur across Iowa. So you're looking at a rather a rare event that we would actually put on this considerable or catastrophic damage.
So the specifics are only there in this upper tier of severity. Is that what you're saying, John?
That's right. It's going to be reserved for the strong to violent tornadoes that are going to be long track tornadoes that usually produce about 80% of the fatalities and injuries in the United States. And this is something that's a rare event. Only about 1 or 2% of these type of tornadoes actually occur if you include all the tornadoes.
Mm-hmm. If you are listening and have a question about the new warning system or about severe weather, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can also put a post on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Brad Small, so compare that with what we have now. How is it different? So we have different levels of severity, and we know the wording pretty well by now, don't we?
Right. In many ways, this will not be a change for most folks. It's the same warnings. The delivery messages and methods will be the same. It'll still be radio, television, your weather radio, but it'll be how the wording is formatted. It'll be much easier to read whether the tornado warning is based on the radar, whether it's been observed by spotters or law enforcement. And there'll also be a tag at the bottom which explicitly states whether it's a radar or observed, or whether it's, as John mentioned, the considerable or catastrophic level of what we expect. And that'll enable some vendors to format these and parse these warnings in an automated sense if they wanted to take that information and deliver it to their users in whatever method they see fit. So in many ways it won't change. It'll still be a text that folks on the radio would be able to read. It'll say where the storm is, how it's moving, what towns are in the path, but we'll also add what degree of damage we expect and whether the tornado was observed by someone or at this point still developing and detected by radar.
Here's an example I have from one of the test states. This is an actual warning, I understand, from near Sumner, Kansas last year. I'll just read it verbatim. It's four or five lines here. This is a life-threatening situation. You could be killed if not underground or in a tornado shelter. Complete destruction of entire neighborhoods is likely. Many well-built homes and businesses will be completely swept from their foundations. Debris will block most roadways. Mass devastation is highly likely, making the area unrecognizable to survivors. That's quite a difference, John Hazy.
Well, it sure is, because that's going to be those type of tornadoes that are the violent EF5 tornadoes that have winds over 200 miles an hour. And the perfect example is that Joplin, Missouri tornado, where you had complete devastation. So this is the warning that we'll be issuing and adding that verbiage when we have confirmation that there actually is a violent tornado on the ground based on spotter reports and what the radar shows.
Mm-hmm. Brad Small, that's very scary. If you hear that from your radio or on your TV or read that on your internet, that's very scary. Who comes up with that language?
Well, we're trying to convey the knowledge that we have as a meteorologist, what we think the outcome is going to be. And in the past, the warnings were fairly similar, whether it was a weak tornado in the open area or a large, long-lived, long-track tornado going into a highly populated urban area. So the goal of the warning is to heighten the awareness and tell the folks and the people out there really what we think is going to happen. And if that's what we think is going to happen, that's exactly the message we want to convey.
Right. And if you hear mass devastation is highly likely, the area unrecognizable to survivors, it's not one where you saunter out onto your lawn and look at the heavens, is it?
No, not at all. Folks need to take action immediately. And as you touched on, Ben, earlier, some of the studies that were done in Joplin where people unfortunately don't do that, that they predominantly get their warnings from the siren system still, which is not the best, but that's the state of the current warning system right now. People depend on the warning sirens initially in many instances, and then their first instinct after that is to seek more information. And those several multiple steps of seeking more information, whether it be through the media or a loved one or a family friend or even run outside and look, whatever the case may be, is not really what we want. So anything we can do to get people to act, understand the severity, and act very quickly is the goal of the program.
Actually, last year I was in Joplin to talk with several survivors of that devastating tornado that killed about 160 people. I wanted to play a little audio from a couple that I focused on, Martha and Ian. Their whole neighborhood was leveled. Their house was leveled except for the closet, the ground floor closet they were in. This house had no basement, as many houses do not in Joplin. So they survived in their closet, which is a harrowing tale in itself. But here's a section of the interview that I did with them when they're talking about how they came to realize this was going to be severe weather. So John and Brad, if you could listen to this and see how it fits in with our discussion, because I think it really does. This is Martha Goldman, Ian Coday. They are survivors of the Joplin 2011 EF5 tornado. I'm interviewing them last year at this time.
Well, I was out on our little sun porch where we would often eat our donuts, and I had spent most of the day painting on a painting. We had had a nice little homemade brunch earlier in the day, and it started to kind of look stormy out, and I used to love storms, so I was kind of pleased by it. It was rolling clouds and thunder and a little bit of lightning. And I didn't really think much of it until the tornado siren started going off.
And Ian, she came in, and when did you first get an idea that this was something more than the average storm?
Well, the first time I really started thinking that something was up, I guess, is when she asked me to turn off my Xbox, you know, so we could check out the weather. I was a little bit, really? But I did. She was watching the weather. And I went out to the back porch to look out and see the clouds and see what was going on, and the sirens were going off. And so I noticed some hailstones coming down, and we talked about, well, we should move our cars so that they don't get hail damage. And after I had her move her car underneath the tree, and I parked my car in a garage, and I was looking out the window again, and just something crept through the back of my mind that told me that I'm going to remember this.
So those are survivors, Martha and Ian, from the Joplin tornado there, talking with them in a donut shop last year. The donut shop's still there in their neighborhood. Their whole neighborhood flattened. That's where I was talking with them. John Hazy, when we listen to that, you can imagine their account would have been, could have been very different. They were very lucky to have survived being in that closet, the only standing part of their house that was left after that. But if we imagine this new warning system being in place at that time, these survivors would have had likely a different account, or not?
Well, I think so, Ben, because this is what's happened over the years is people get apathetic or complacent with all the warnings being issued.
And they don't necessarily even want to turn off their Xbox.
Well, right. And then people who study human behavior have found out during warning situations that people, their first instinct is to try to find information or confirmation from additional sources. They may have wait till a friend calls them that they saw the tornado, or they may wait till the sirens go off. And a lot of times the tornado is already bearing down on them. So this is why in the impact base warnings that we're actually putting in that strong wording to get people to respond much quicker.
Mm. Brad Small, so did a lot of the impetus for this change come from the Joplin disaster?
It did. They had a group of emergency managers down there in Kansas and Missouri that studied the experiment last year in the more limited scope and tried to glean more information from how people got their warnings, how they're disseminated, and ultimately it is traced back to the service assessment from Joplin and societal impacts of how people respond to it. So that's pretty much where it started, and we're trying to implement some of those changes and findings this year.
Mm-hmm. Brad, did you think, based on what you're hearing about these experiment states, that this will save lives?
I sure hope so. I mean, people have to get the warning first of all, so you can get warnings through multiple methods. So, I mean, this wording is great if you get the warning. So there needs to be multiple venues for you to get your warning message, whether it be a siren, a weather radio. This year, many cell phones will have it through the wireless emergency alert system. Radio, television, of course. So redundancy is best to get your warnings. And then once you get it, hopefully that message of the heightened urgency is conveyed, and people will take action immediately without thinking, oh, this is just another warning. And that's really the goal, is that, I mean, we're not using these terms lightly. When we say catastrophic, I mean, this is, like you mentioned in that wording you had from the warning, we're talking devastation. And loss of life is very possible.
If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with two Iowa National Weather Service, Iowa-based National Weather Service meteorologists, Brad Small in the Des Moines office of the National Weather Service, John Hazy in the Quad Cities office. So we're talking about a new warning system for severe weather. It's called an impact-based warning system, so that we have more specifics, especially in the very severe categories of this. John Hazy, so tell me a little bit about the storms. Some are more predictable than others, and so therefore this impact-based warning system will give us more specifics in some cases when it's severe. Are there severe weather systems that are hard to be specific about?
Well, we always look at the situation as far as the synoptic pattern, the environment, and the atmosphere, what's going on, and we can relate those to past events. And we're looking at the more classic synoptic patterns with the strong low-pressure system in the spring and the strong jet stream aloft, along with a pretty decent cold front coming across. And these are the situations that we are looking at as meteorologists, and we'll be able to tell there's certain days that this is going to be a big severe weather event versus something that's really weak.
Mm-hmm. If we go back to earlier instances, of course, here in Iowa, we had the Parkersburg tornado coming up on several years since that happened. Brad Small, any idea if that would have been better in that situation? I don't know how much you've studied that storm.
Well, it certainly would have been considered. One of the goals of this project is to have very low or even zero false alarm rates. And so in order to issue, especially this catastrophic tag, I mean, that when we issue that, we know there's a tornado. And when we say no, we mean that it's observed by a spotter or law enforcement or someone of that nature. Unfortunately, a lot of Iowa's tornadoes start in rural areas, so the tag may not be, and this wording may not initially be in the warning. So whether it would be issued in Parkersburg, which did develop in a more rural area, that it may or may not have in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But if we got information that there was a tornado of that strength and magnitude heading toward a town, we would at least probably issue the considerable tag. But when you get a great distance from, especially from the radar, and when reports are more sketchy, we don't want to say it's going to impact a smaller town such as Parkersburg when it may or may not. I mean, the tornado only hit the south part of Parkersburg, I believe. And so when we're talking just forecasting a tornado down to a mile or two, it becomes a difficult proposition.
Brad, you mentioned catastrophic as a label, considerable as a label, as a descriptor. Can you give us the rundown, if it's not too long, of the levels?
All right. The considerable tag means we have a much higher confidence that there'll be a damaging tornado, but it may not be in the most extreme case. It may not be the largest long-lived, long-track tornado. So the catastrophic tag is a worst-case scenario, definitely. It will be used rarely. I got thinking, I've been in the Weather Service since 1990, and I cannot think of one instance in my career when I've been a warning meteorologist where I would have issued that catastrophic tag.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking around the office. We've never had one hit a big metro area of like Des Moines or the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area in our forecast area. So it's going to be exceedingly rare, and it may be many, many years before that tag is used. But when it is used, people need to understand that this means business, and this is the highest threat of a tornado warning we can issue.
Mm-hmm. Here's some more actual wording from Kansas, where this system has been being used already in an experiment. This is from Russell County, Kansas, an actual warning, I believe, from last year, quoting this: significant house and building damage possible. Mobile homes completely destroyed if hit. Some trees uprooted or snapped. Vehicles will likely be thrown by tornadic winds. So, you are John Hazy, you are writing these actual more specific warnings, or you will be, or do you get them from somewhere else?
Well, they're actually in the computer as a it's already worded in there, and it's automated. So once we select what counties, and we can actually select which tag we want. So then it's already, we can get this out really quick. And the weather radio, which is great to have, is usually the first mm-hmm. situation or way to get your information.
So that automated computer voice would be reading the wording that I quoted there, for instance.
Right.
Okay. Now, John, is this aimed at more at highly populated areas? Are treated rural and urban areas treated differently?
Well, not really, because we're going to be issuing this tag or adding this tag as far as a considerable or a catastrophic anytime we actually know or confirm that there's a strong to violent tornado based on the spotters and what the radar and the environment looks like. So this, we're not going to issue it just for bigger cities. It could be for any town also.
Mm-hmm. Brad Small, let's talk a little bit more about specifically about this severe weather season, which we're entering here. Can you tell us anything about this season, say, compared to last season, which wasn't it last year, the spring of 2011? Very little severe weather, right?
It was indeed. We finished, for the entire state, we had our last tornado in May, and the season ended right then. So it was a very minimal severe weather season. Normally we have around 47 tornadoes across the state, and we had much less than that. I believe it was only in the teens for the number of tornadoes. So people are probably not used to severe weather as much as they have been in the past due to the lull last season. But as far as forecasting this season, it's really difficult to pinpoint how active the season could be. It only takes a few big severe weather events to cause a lot of damage and destruction. And the season as a whole could be relatively benign with a below normal number of tornadoes. So it's really difficult to predict how active the season is going to be.
John Hazy, was last year's absence of severe weather, relative absence of severe weather, a matter of luck or something that larger going on with the systems?
Well, as you know, Ben, last year we actually had a severe drought going on across much of the Midwest, and in fact, 70% of the country was in at least a severe drought, which was the worst since the 1950s. So when you have a drought going on, you really have a lack of any precipitation and severe weather. So this year we're looking at above normal rainfall through June, so at least in eastern Iowa, so there is a potential for enhanced severe weather compared to at least last year when we had the drought going on.
Mm-hmm. Brad, anything to add to that?
No, I think that's a great summation. People need to be – we had just had Severe Weather Awareness Week last week, so hopefully people listen to the tornado drill and know their action plans, how to prepare if any tornado warning is issued. We don't, when we have this project, we don't mean to minimize the lower end of tornado warnings. All tornado warnings are important and need to be acted on accordingly. But the goal is to really hit the higher end. We have knowledge as a meteorologist what the situation is, and we want to convey that to the public and get that word out.
And finally, John Hazy, if you can tell us about this. This is still in an experimental phase forecast product, even though it has been expanded to a good number more states. What has to happen for it to become nationwide? What will you be judging this new system on as being effective or not?
Well, what they'll be doing after the season ends, say in the fall and next winter, then they will be going over exactly how everything panned out, if this actually worked in a good as a good tool, and they'll be researching and see if this would actually be expanded to much more of the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll see after this one season, we'll see what it is, and I suppose include feedback from regular people, right?
Yeah, we'll be getting feedback from emergency managers, the public, and just to see how it actually worked out this year.
Okay. Quickly, we only have like 30 seconds, but Brad, can you tell me how tornado detection has improved in the last decade or so? Has that been a quantum leap?
Well, their resolution of the radar has improved. We're able to see circulations in storms better. The research through various vortex projects and the ability to ascertain the near-storm environment and what ingredients on a local scale are going into days that produce long-lived, long-track tornadoes have really advanced. So our ability to produce forecasts, watches, and warnings is really improved in the past even 5 years.
Okay, Brad Small and John Hazy, meteorologists with the National Weather Service, thank you for joining us this half hour.
Thank you very much.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll listen back to my conversation with storm chaser Jeff Petrovsky, his first-hand account of that deadly Joplin tornado in 2011. That's coming up after this short break. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Today, you're listening to an encore edition of the program. Severe weather experts from around the country will be at an annual Severe Storms and Doppler Radar Conference in Ankeny later this week. My first guest is Jeff Petrovsky. He'll be speaking at that conference. Jeff is a professional storm chaser who's been featured on National Geographic and the Discovery Channels. He won an Emmy for his work covering storms in the Midwest, and with about 35 years of experience chasing storms, he's seen some of the worst tornadoes in recent memory, but nothing could prepare him for what he witnessed firsthand in May of 2011, an EF5 tornado, the strongest rating, nearly a mile wide, that hit Joplin, Missouri, killing 160 people. Jeff Petrosky narrowly survived after his truck was brushed by the twister. He was also one of the first witnesses on the scene of the devastation the storm left behind. Jeff Petrosky joins us for this first half hour of River to River. Welcome.
Good afternoon, sir.
Take us through, if you could, that day for you, May 22nd, 2011. Why were you in the area?
Well, I live in Tulsa, so, you know, anytime we were in, you know, this March, April, May time frame in the plains, we always were very situation aware as far as severe weather on a day-to-day, you know, occurrence. And Saturday, on May 21st, the day before the Jolpin tornado, we had tornadoes in eastern Kansas up near Topeka, which we filmed, going through a mobile home park up there at Whiteside community at a lake. And we got back very late Saturday night. So we knew that the atmosphere was very buoyant and very explosive and very ripe for severe weather the following day on Sunday. As Kathy and I, we got up Saturday, you know, Sunday morning around 7 and looked at the Storm Prediction Center risk page, and we looked at the atmosphere and the models and the computers, and it looked like the area in southeast Kansas, southwest Missouri, northeast Oklahoma, and northwest Arkansas was going to be the zone of active severe weather, and that's the area we targeted, and we left Tulsa at about 10 o'clock, drove into southeast Kansas, expected storms to fire around 1:30, 2 o'clock ahead of the draw line in the warm front there in southeast Kansas, and the cold front and draw line intersection, and that's kind of the area we targeted, and got in that area about 1:30, and storms started developing, and then soon after, you know, watches came out, tornado watches, and then it just got, you know, steadily worse after that point.
Kathy, you mentioned that's your wife, and you do storm chasing with her. Now tell us, when was the first point on that day that you encountered this, what turned out to be a massive tornado?
You know, around 5 o'clock, we'd follow the storms from southeast Kansas over into just northwest of Jolpin near Curl Junction, where the first tornado warning was out. That storm produced baseball-sized hail, and it did eventually gust out, and it produced an outflow banner, which is kind of a direction change from the winds around the south-southeast back to the northwest. And that outflow banner went down to the northwest suburbs of Jolpin. About that time, around the 5:20, 5:25 p.m., a new storm developed on what we call the flanking line of that storm, which was back over southeast Kansas, just west of Jolpin, about 10 miles, a little town called Galena, Kansas. A new storm developed, and in about 5 minutes after it developed, we saw a very strong rotation, both on Doppler. We started getting radio reports of funnel clouds back on the state line. And so we were downtown Jolpin. We heard those, you know, the key pieces of information, and also looking at the radar in the car. You know, you start putting 2-2 together real quick that something's rapidly unfolding. It's going to come into the city. The thing that caught my eye that was really, I think it's going to be, as we go into further science over the next couple of years and understand why it developed so fast and the intensity of the tornado, is one of the key things is the winds, the inflow into the storm on the wall cloud as it left downtown Jolpin. The winds around the northeast at about 40 miles an hour, and that's really critical because that's the inflow into the back of the storm, and that storm is moving into that inflow, which creates a tremendous amount of spin, helicity, and shear as that big wall cloud was moving into that environment. So knowing all those things, we rapidly saw things coming together in a very what would normally take 45 minutes to spin up a good storm, a good tornado. This happened in a matter of a couple of minutes. We saw things rapidly deteriorating to the point of I ran into Officer Brewer on the west side of Jolpin on 7th Street, and I begged him to get the sirens going. I did not know about 15 minutes before I got into town the sirens had been sounded for the first tornado warning north of Jolpin, but when I arrived in Jolpin, the sirens was not going. So Officer Brewer saw me pull up beside him in my truck, and in a very quick manner, I tell him tell him that the storm's getting ready to tornado. He sees my radar. He sees the hook on the radar, which is an indication of strong rotation. And he says, the look on my face, he tells me a couple weeks later when we met, that he says, the look on my face was a panic, and that whatever I had to say was going to be the most important message in his entire police career, and that what I was going to say was going to have a profound effect on him as far as, you know, what was getting ready to happen. But then he immediately called the dispatch and told him that a storm chaser just pulled in the city and said, you know, a significant tornado is coming down, get the sirens going. I immediately called 911, made a U-turn there at 7th and Black Hat, went back east 1 mile. I was on the phone with 911 asking the 911 operator to get the sirens going. The tornado was now on the ground and getting just about a quarter mile wide, quickly going to a half mile to three-quarter mile wide tornado. Mm-hmm. And it was coming into the city at a very quickly.
Okay, Jeff, we have a little bit of audio of your commentary at that time, 20 or so seconds of it. This is you on that day, May 22nd, 2011. Joplin, Missouri, an EF5 tornado very close to you. Let's listen to it, and you can tell us where you were at this point.
I got it.
Stay with it,
Kevin. We're right down toward it.
Oh, crap.
I know.
Why are you doing that?
Cass, we don't have all the roads. Large tornado. It's a maxi wedge on the ground. Ma'am, this is a Jeff Petrosi storm chaser. I have a large destructive tornado and on the southwest side of Joplin. Notified. Large tornado on the ground doing massive damage.
Okay, we hear the panic in your voice, and you say maxi-wide. This is when it had reached nearly a mile wide.
Yes. At that point, I was on 20th Street, which is still at an east-west main thoroughfare through Joplin. And I'm at 20th and Scheffendecker, and that's 1 mile east of Black Hat. I'm still west of Main Street. And 20th and Scheffendecker is when I turn right, and I'm on the phone with the 911 operator. And, you know, kind of, I can laugh about it today, but it wasn't funny at the time, is trying to read Scheffendecker. If you get a GPS and go look at it on Google Map and read that name upside down, backwards while you're driving, it was very difficult to the 911 operator. But reading it as a turn right, and it goes south on Scheffendecker toward 20th Street, I'm telling the 911 operator, you can tell I'm talking very fast, very, fear and
urgency.
Panic that, you know, this huge tornado is now, you know, consuming the south side of Joplin, and it's just going to get worse as it can easily move into the city. And at 17th and Scheffendecker, about 45 seconds on the phone with the 911 operator, between my report, the officer Brewer's report, a fireman on the southwest side saying, hey, I see debris in the air, those three reports combined with Keith, the emergency manager director, to resound the sirens again, knowing that those numerous reports of tornadoes on the ground moving the city, and it's that sounding of the second siren, that history will prove that, and it already has, that it was a critical part of saving many, many thousands of lives that day. It's because people live in Joplin know that, first of all, it was very unusual. They never hear two sirens go off, because generally it's one siren only for one tornado warning, and that's it. You never hear a second siren. And so this day, they knew something was different. A lot of stores and a lot of managers, a lot of people call me and text me and Facebook me the weeks and months afterwards saying that when they knew that second siren sounded, some of them went to the door, some of them just literally went and dove under their house. Some people went to the basement. Some people tried to take shelter at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so that was a critical part of history. We get to 20th and Scheffendecker, and by that time, as I'm going south on Scheffendecker, and this is the kind of the part where I know that it's going to get really bad, is I see two-story building south of me about 4 to 5 blocks approximately, about 23rd and 4th and 5th and Scheffendecker, and some houses. I see the front wall of the tornado come across Scheffendecker, and by the time I turn left on 20th Street, which is maybe 45 seconds of watching it come across in front of me here, this F4 going F5, is that I see the back wall of the tornado come across Scheffendecker, and when it clears Scheffendecker at a very high rate of speed, it's like kind of like a curtain opening on stage. It just moves across Scheffendecker very rapidly. Everything I saw standing 45 seconds earlier was gone. Two-story buildings were gone. Right. And I knew at that point there was an EF4 to EF5 tornado going through the city.
Okay, and I've actually been been to that area. They're still rebuilding, and it is quite impressive. You have a 20 block wide path that is just wiped clean of housing.
Yes.
Completely. Now, how close did you and your wife in your pickup actually come to the tornado?
You know, probably 20th and Main, Maiden Lane, and on over to, Iowa Street. The north wall, as the tornado moved east-northeast into along and south of 20th, it finally crossed 20th in front of me. Probably 2 to 3 blocks was in the northwest wall of the tornado as it passed me just to my south and east, and then eventually east, and then it turned east-southeast as the tornado weakened and went back southeast. But, the weather flow that day, the jet stream and stuff, the storm should have moved east right from the get-go, but it didn't. On these big, high, what we call high Cape days, no two tornadoes are alike, no two F5s are alike. And just as this day proved that, you know, once they're big like that, is that they just kind of track where they want to track, no matter which way they should move. There's, you know, is moving northeast. I thought it was going to be more easterly that day to east, southeast. It didn't do that. But to answer your question, the tornado was very close to us. I'd say at Main Street on over to Iowa Street. Is it blew out my windows on the driver's side, got covered in glass. That's when we boarded the Chase, and shortly thereafter we went into search and rescue mode to start finding people that was buried in the rubble.
My guest is Jeff Petrosky. He is a professional storm chaser. He and his wife chase storms all around the country. We were listening to his firsthand experience of May 22nd, 2011, in the area of Joplin, Missouri, where an EF5, that's the strongest rating, EF5 tornado struck, killing 160 people, I believe injuring somewhere around 1,000 people in Joplin. Did you, close to the tornado, did you hear your ears popped? You notice that pressure change?
Oh, absolutely. You notice the... A lot of people describe it. It's kind of like a vacuum. As you feel like you can feel like air leaving your body. I can tell you when I was going down 20th Street, and there's just no way to describe the sound. When I tell you, it sounds like, you know, B-52 bombers above you. The sound was so deafening. It was so loud. You know, you take 3 million cubic yards of debris flying around, and if all the houses are destroyed, the buildings is the sound is so deafening. Even with the windows up before they blew out. You know, Kathy and I would have to yell at each other just to hear each other because it was so loud. The ground was rumbling. Some people refer to it as like an earthquake. I know there, I have had many, many people tell me when they heard the second siren, they said that they could see, actually, one gentleman called me and said that he saw water on his table was vibrating, and he said he knew the rumble, whatever was coming, was so bad he didn't want to see it, and he dove under his house and he survived. The rumble was so bad, like I said, it was raining debris a mile or 2 to 3 miles ahead of the tornado. So literally, people over at the Walmart and Home Depot, literally the first thing they saw when they did before they saw the tornado was literally debris falling out of the sky. And that was common all along and east of the tornado path. It was those are the kind of reports you have, you know, that we receive day after day.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about this career you have as a storm chaser. It's a full-time job for you and your wife?
You know what? In the springtime it is, and we also, you know, take care, you know, chase hurricanes. Kathy doesn't like hurricanes, but I do, and I do hurricanes in the summer months, you know, as we get into August, September, October. Sometimes that you go out of country, you know, a couple of years back we went to Bermuda and also Haiti. And the last year was at Hurricane Irene on the, you know, the Outer Banks, and that was quite unbelievable. It actually cut the Outer Banks in about six locations where it was in, you know, couldn't make it to the mainland, had to take a boat back. You know, we do hurricanes as well, but yeah, anything extreme weather, whether it be hurricanes, tornadoes, flash floods, blizzards, ice storms, we always photograph Mother Nature, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes bad things happen. Most times it doesn't. It's just, it's really pretty and it's nice out chasing, but sometimes really bad things happen. And, like the Joplin day. And what was amazing, even after the Joplin experience, you know, 48 hours later, we had another significant outbreak in Oklahoma on May 24th that also produced another EF5 west of Oklahoma City, which we filmed 48 hours after the Joplin tornado. So it's just an unbelievable week of extreme severe weather.
Mm-hmm. So there is no certificate or training, specialized training for a storm chaser, or is there?
There is. You know, the National Weather Service has, you know, their spotter program. They have the, you know, the NWA as well as AMS. They, we have spotter training, which I highly recommend to anybody that's wanting to go out and be a storm spotter, whether you're the local EMS or your fire emergency service, as well as just an average person that likes weather and wants to get involved in, whether it's be a ham communications, you know, be a ham operator as well as spotter training. But most local weather offices in the U.S., the National Weather Service has local training that they can go to the spotter training classes. And if you go to nws.noaa.gov, look on their website, and your particular, like Des Moines has excellent one, so does Lincoln University, Lincoln over at Omaha. Those regional offices have spotter training, and actually they go right through the spring. So this is a great time to go out and learn how to become a spotter before severe weather season really gets going here. And it actually looks like it make it going in Iowa maybe Thursday, Friday. Thursday looks like severe weather. Potentially next Sunday looks like potentially a big day. So this would be a good time to, you know, get the training done.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Petrosky is my guest, a storm chaser. And many people cannot imagine doing what you and your wife Kathy do, chasing storms, chasing tornadoes, in some cases chasing hurricanes. So what is the appeal of this for you?
Well, I think in the early days, you know, back when I was young, you know, I was 14 years old, almost drowned in a flood in Tulsa, So it almost cost me my life. So I was, you know, that got my attention, obviously. And then when I was a year later, we had the June 8th, 1974 tornado break in Oklahoma. And I remember telling my mom, at noon that day, there's going to be tornadoes in Tulsa by 5 p.m. And she believed me, but didn't want to believe me because it was a clear, beautiful, sunny, 80-degree day in June. And I tracked the tornadoes along I-44. And then finally, about 3:30, I said, Mom, there's going to be tornadoes in Southwest Tulsa because each town's listening, each town on the radio there, KRMG radio out of Tulsa, about the tornadoes tracking up I-44. Sure enough, 5 o'clock, I mean, we've got a plate glass, sliding glass window faces the west. I'm over in Broken Arrow. Look across South Tulsa, I can see the area, you know, where Oral Roberts is in that area. And I saw, you know, a very large tornado coming across South Tulsa at 5:15. And from that day on, my mom always believed me when I said there's going to be severe weather. She always believed what I was telling her because I learned at a young age it's tracking weather and tracking severe weather was always fascinating to me. And then I built houses in Tulsa for 15 years, and so you have to understand weather for scheduling, you know, when you can pour concrete, you know, about getting roofs on. So that played an intricate part of me in the construction industry. So, you know, locally I filmed storms, you know, within 20, 30 miles of Tulsa when I was younger. I'd take pictures, and then the local media would pick up and publish some of my pictures and works and video. And as time went on, I would, go farther out. I remember the early days in the late 70s. I remember stopping by University of Oklahoma and the satellite, you know, weather room, the OU medical, meteorology school there, and we'd go by the map room, and back then we'd have a Dyfax printer, would print off a satellite picture once an hour, but there'd be a nice picture. And so by 11 or noon, I would drive from Tulsa to Oklahoma, you know, going out west to Oklahoma City. I could stop by there and get 2-3 hours worth of sat maps, and we'd actually lay them on top of each other and then fan them back and forth so you could tell where the clouds were going to build. And that's all we had back then.
Nowadays, you've got technology. You mentioned radar earlier on. You've got radar actually on your truck. Tell us about some of the technology you use.
Yeah, don't have radar on the truck. We have radar access to, you know, the NOAA sites, National Weather Service sites, and then also the live radars like there in Des Moines, KCCI's radar. There's live radars that are on the web as well as we have access to. And so we can see that data in real time. And then we'd have other data such as, you know, through Barron, we have it's called Barron Tornado Index, and it's other products that we produce, a company I worked for, that tells you where the most severe part of the storm is and if the chances of a tornado in 0 to 10. So we have that type of technology in the car today, so it takes a lot of that guesswork out as far as where do you want to be. And sometimes these storms, you may have 5 or 6 you're chasing, but which one's going to produce a tornado, which ones aren't. And that's the skill and the science, but a lot of it still comes back to what your eyes are seeing out in the field. Also, just pattern recognition, and then you have to think about when I've had other events in the past, you know, which one storm, tornado, and which one's going to do it today. And then you're always constantly thinking about that. But we also have, you know, GPS, which is critical. We have satellite phone, which is critical for communications. We have a new product called Spot, which can send messages if you lose communications, like in Joplin. You can still get Facebook and Twitter messages out through Spot. It's a satellite communication system. It's very affordable, and I think every family needs one. And it's those kind of things we use today that helps not only track severe weather, but also when we find damage or get in a situation like we're in Joplin last year, it's sending out those emergency pleas for help on Facebook and Twitter. We have mobile broadband we use. We have different cell carriers we use for our iPhones and iPads. So it's a whole different world today than what we were just even 5 or 10 years ago. And Jason, it's a lot more electronics and a lot of other things to look at while you're in the vehicle chasing during the day.
A lot of severe weather thus far in 2012. Spring just starting here in the Midwest. What do you expect? What have you experienced so far in 2012?
You know what? 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, March 2nd, I was over at Henryville, Indiana. Was at the school that got hit, missed the tornado by about 2 or 3 minutes, and then storm number 2 hit us. And the school's literally cutting two by a large EF3, EF4 tornado. You know, we're above normal on the storm prediction site today. We're above normal right now. The trend is we're slightly above. We're, I think, 380 for the year. So we're above normal even over last year.
What does that mean, above normal?
Above normal means, you know, if you have a normal, you know, 1,500, 1,800 tornadoes a year, the pace in which how many reports have been so far to the year, it means we're averaging slightly above normal. In other words, if I was to get a normal year, if you were to get, you know, 15 or 20 tornadoes, maybe you have 25 this year versus 20 last year. Mm-hmm. So the number, the count is up a little bit. It doesn't mean it's going to continue. The count could go back down. It could weaken in it below average, you know, before the year's up. But right now we're ahead of average. My gut is And this is not a simple answer. We could talk 12 hours about this subject. That is, it's a global effect. It has to do with the equatorial Pacific waters. It has to do with the polar oscillation. It has to do with the Gulf being 1 to 2 degrees above normal sea surface temperature. It has to do with the jet stream. There's a lot of variables going there. So it's not a blanket statement. You can't apply it to every year. But if you look at all those patterns and everything, the pattern's very conducive for significant outbreaks. And we're already, look at the temperatures, look how we already had four significant events in Oklahoma in February, and then as well as in March. It looks like we're, gearing up here in the next week. We're going to have quite a few severe weather events coming up, it looks like, on the near horizon. And some of those could be significant. So,
and specifically for Iowa, our area of the Midwest?
Yeah, I think you're going to get a little taste of severe weather Thursday night as a little wave, not a major, but a little wave comes in, and maybe Omaha back down to southwest Iowa could produce severe weather. And then that pattern resets itself back up as we get into Sunday and Monday as a major trough comes into the plains, and there could be significant severe weather across about a multi-state area all the way from South Dakota all the way to Texas, Arkansas, Missouri, Iowa, as we get into Sunday and Monday time frame as a major upper trough comes out in the plains. And it's still top events. You could have tornadoes. There could be significant tornadoes at places, but if they're in rural areas and they're in farm fields and they don't hit anything, it's not a big story. But if you take the wrong tornado in the wrong timing and it hits a particular city, then then you have a big disaster.
Jeff Petroski is an Emmy Award-winning storm chaser who joined our program last spring. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.